Welcome to another edition of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. Brought to you by our partners Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, FireTech, makers of on-scene soot and ash decon products, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the new cool towel, and the 2017 Great Florida Fire School. We'll be back with today's show right after these important messages. How would you like 5 days of quality fire training in sunny Southwest Florida? There will be all types of classes, including hot classes, and some of the biggest names in the fire service today, all for an incredibly low registration fee. That's right. Join us at the Great Florida Fire School, November 8th through the 12th, at Fort Myers Holiday Inn. Guests include Instructor Captain John Dixon, Dan Kerrigan, Instructor Chris Baker, Ryan Pennington of Jump Seat Fuse, and presentations by some of the biggest names in the fire service today. That should be good enough. But one more big surprise. The fee is just $125. That's right, a buck and a quarter for as many classes as you wish to attend and admission to the banquet. Want to register? Would you like to be a sponsor? Head over to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 1-800-883-4817. Again, go to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 1-800-883-4817. The Great Florida Fire School. Be there. The tone sound and the dispatcher announces station 14 and 16, working residential structure, and that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams and you take stock of your PPE, bunker pants, check, turnout coat, check, hood, check, gloves, check, escape line, check, SCBA, strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the red crossley, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap of the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores of your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great sponsors, the Firehouse Tribune. Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on and off duty, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. I'm your host, Steve Green. This is our first podcast return after Hurricane Irma here in Florida, and actually a great deal more than Florida. Florida's East Coast, West Coast, and the Keys. Of course, just a week and a half before that was Hurricane Harvey that hit Texas and a good part of the Midwest. And with all the trials and tribulations, the deaths and injuries, the destruction, comes the shining stars. And I'm happy to say that for a change, there are many stars to be talked about that have come out of these disasters. Right now, as I'm recording this for you, the islands, Puerto Rico right now especially, are getting battered by Hurricane Maria, one of the most powerful so far this season, hitting the island initially at a Cat 5 and now quickly dropped down to a Cat 4 level, but still way too much. Just before I began the recording, I received a news bulletin that the entire island of Puerto Rico is without power. The stars that come out of this first, of course, are the first responders. The men and women of our fire service, EMS, and police departments who, in the face of danger and the unknown for their own welfare and the welfare of their own families, dedicated themselves to rescue, search, assistance, anything they could do to help the other victims of these tremendous disasters. But again, another shining star, or group of shining stars, I should say, comes out of you, the citizens. Though we are so often divided in this country by politics, by faith, by so many other concepts, yet when the excrement hits the fan, so shall we say, we know when it's time to come together and help each other out. And it was amazing during the floods in Houston to see the citizen navies get together and come from all over the Southeast and the Midwest and even the West. Some people coming from as far west as California and as far east as Alabama and Florida with their boats to help rescue families and other folks from their flooded homes in the greater Houston area. And here in Florida, where people came together and got ready for Hurricane Irma, which we thought was going to hit the East Coast head on, somehow those of us on the East Coast were very lucky. For many of us, it was unbeknownst until we woke up Sunday morning that the hurricane had taken a turn away from us. But unfortunately, to our dear neighbors on the West Coast and, of course, the Keys and up towards the Panhandle. And yet, we too came together, the citizen army, the citizen rescuers, to help our neighbors, to check in on them, to rescue them, to bring them water, food, fans, generators, fuel, whatever they might need to help out. And these are our shining hours. These are our best times. But why does it take a disaster to bring out the best of us, in us? Why can't we share ideas and opinions without violence, without hatred? Disasters don't pick us based on our political opinions or the color of our skin or our faith. Disasters happen to all of us. Let now be the time that we come together and use the word respect. Neighbor. And learn. We'll be right back with our guest, Robbie Owens.
No matter where we live, or no matter the season, there is always work to be done that makes us sweat. Just how can we keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel and pre-moistened with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Just open your cool towel pack, remove the towel and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neck like a kerchief, wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times again, and Cool Towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your cool towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your cool towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowel.com or call 1-800-918-8323. Remember, you're going to work and you're going to sweat. Make Cool Towel your answer to keeping cool. When you're done knocking down the flames, you want to hit the apparatus and head back to the barn, right? Wrong. If you do, you're carrying all types of poisons and carcinogens with you and spreading them wherever you go. But you can clean your gear and yourself before you even leave the scene with a Fireground Decon Kit from the folks at FireTech. This kit contains everything you need to properly and safely decontaminate yourself while still on the scene. This kit includes a pop-up pod for a private changing room, exclusive Fireground Decon hose designed to reduce contamination, all-natural decon towels, a special PPE cleaner formulated to remove stubborn hydrocarbons and that meets NFPA 1851 standard, and more. With a cancer rate among firefighters at 60% against only 20% among the general population, we can no longer ignore the dangers we can't see. For more information, visit their website at www.firegrounddeconstore.com or call FireTech at 954-906-1118.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking, but no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
And welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. And we are very happy to be back. We had a little break thanks to a very nasty lady called Irma, but we are all safe and sound, thank goodness, in my area. Although to my dear neighbors in Miami-Dade and in the Florida Keys and on the West Coast, especially a shout out to our good friend, one of the guys who talked me into doing podcasts, and that's our good friend Captain Joe DeVito, Joe Ed 911 on Twitter. And Joe, I haven't heard back from you, but just know you've been our prayers and in our hearts and our minds ever since the storm took a turn last week. So I'm thinking of you, and I'm going to see you in a few weeks at the Great Florida Fire School. Can't wait to finally meet you after 2 years of an online friendship. And our guest today actually also couldn't be better to bring us back, and that is a gentleman by the name of Captain Robert C. Owens. But if you're on Twitter, you know him as Average Jake Firefighter. And if you read his tweets, you know that the Cap is a real guy when it comes to being firefighters. And I knew that when I saw his Twitter handle, Firefighter Jake, because I grew up in Boston, in the Boston area, and everybody, every firefighter in Boston is known as a Jake, and that's, we think where the term was coined. But so just before we came on the air, I spoke with Robbie about it, and he said even in Virginia, it's a common term for firefighters. So that just brought me closer with Robbie than I even was couple of minutes ago. So Robbie, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show. And let me just tell folks a little bit about you. Robbie is a captain and NREMTI with Henrico County, Virginia Division of Fire. He began his fire service career with the Mechanicsville Volunteer Fire Department of Virginia. He previously served as a career firefighter in Stafford County, Virginia. He has worked part-time for New Kent County Fire Rescue and served as a fire safety technician for King's Dominion theme park in Doswell, Virginia. If you haven't been there, that's the place you have to go. A great theme park. I just told him that we used to drive up from Greensboro, when I lived in Greensboro, up to King's Dominion for a great end-of-the-year program for my school kids. He is a certified instructor level 2 and fire officer level 4 by the Virginia Department of Fire Programs and a mass casualty incident management instructor for the Virginia Office of EMS. He graduated as a member of the charter class for the NFA Managing Officer Program. He has his BS in fire science from Columbia Southern University. He has presented programs at FDIC and Firehouse Expo and runs the fire service blog www.averagejakefirefighter.com. And other than that, he hasn't done much in the fire service. So, Cap, it's a pleasure to welcome you. And you've picked a great topic, one that's very close to my heart. And today we're going to talk about how do we stop firefighters' cardiac arrests? How do we stop this, almost this plague, this epidemic that we're seeing time and time again? So take it away, Cap. Let's hear and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, thanks for having me on. It's an honor. I've listened to several of your podcasts with Ryan Pennington and Bobby Halton. That was a marathon, by the way. that took some time to get into. but I'm a pretty avid podcast listener, and your podcast is one of the top ones out there. So I appreciate you having me on to talk about this topic. So firefighter cardiac arrest, it's a topic that is again, just like it is in the American Fire Service, it's kind of near and dear to my heart. So you kind of have to, you know, everyone always asks me, you know, how did I get involved in this topic? How did I get involved in just kind of doing some personal research and kind of just on a personal mission? And it kind of, in order to answer that, you have to go back to when I was a young volunteer. As you said in your tremendous opening statement about my bio, I started out in the McLeanville Volunteer Fire Department, and I come from a fire department family. My dad's a firefighter. My brother is a firefighter. My sister did not want to be a firefighter, so she married one. So we have a lot of firefighters in my family. And I got involved in my volunteer fire department when I was 15 years old. In Virginia, you could join at 15 as a junior member. At 16, you could take firefighter one and go into fires. So I was all in coming from a fire department family. Well, so, you know, get my firefighter one and two, starting to pull duty crews at the firehouse, getting to spend the nights there on the weekends. And I was probably about 17, not yet 18, wasn't even an EMT yet. I didn't take my EMT until I was 18 years old. And we're in the middle of the night, spending the night at the firehouse. And all of a sudden, one of the older members slaps on the lights and yells, "Help me, I'm having a heart attack."
Oh, wow.
Oh gosh, right? So we get him in the bay, and at this time, EMS was not very big in Hanover County Fire and EMS. Now it is huge. But back then there was no paid staff. There was no, it was an all volunteer system. And the firehouses, basically we had, in EMS equipment wise, we had an AED. That was essentially it, an oxygen bag. So we had limited resources to try and help this guy. So we called the local volunteer rescue squad. They showed up, and lo and behold, he was having some sort of cardiac issue. So then you kind of fast forward, I get hired with Henrico Fire. And one of my mentors getting hired with Henrico Fire was a guy named Jimmy McClure. Jimmy was a guy who had been at our station for 20 years when I got there. And that just was kind of unheard of. We've always been kind of, in Henrico, we've always been kind of growing. We didn't have a career fire department until the 60s. And that was just because City of Richmond tried to annex us. So we needed a career fire department. So we started with this career fire department. So he had been at our station for 20 years. And when the day he left, he gave me his seat at the table. He was like, you know, look, you're a great kid. I want you to be here for the next 20 years. You can have my seat at the table. That's a big deal for anybody that knows anything about a firehouse. For a guy that has been there and has tenure and you respect that, you know, for him to say, you can have my seat at the table, that is a big deal.
Absolutely.
It's a huge deal. So we go to this fire in the far eastern part of our county. Everyone is very familiar with Jimmy Dean, the guy. Most people are familiar with Jimmy Dean, the sausage guy, but a lot of people, you know, he was a singer, songwriter, actor. He was in a great James Bond movie. Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
He was in a great James Bond movie. So he had a house on the James River that was about a quarter mile off the only road that led into there. You could only get about 2 fire apparatus back there. So once the first engine or two got back there, everybody else had to walk. So Jimmy comes from another station. He is walking down the thing. We go in there. We're already tired by the time we get there. The whole entire roof is on fire. We're working hard. And we come out, and Jimmy comes out. He's exhausted. He's about 61 years old at this point in time, and he collapses. And all of those things, you know, you start – everyone and people, you know, that went through the fire ground rapidly, like, oh, my gosh, Jimmy's down. Jimmy's down. And so, of course, everyone stops what they're doing because he's a legend in our fire department. So we go down, and we're like, oh, my gosh. And he's exhausted. He says he's having a little bit of chest pain. So we're trying to get him up. We're trying to get him to the ambulance. He, of course, is getting kind of angry that we're doting over him like that. But after that, and I kind of got to thinking, after that, what would we do if Jimmy had a heart attack? Like, if he went down right there, what would we do? And so I started doing some research. You know, I'm like any good fireman. I see a problem, I'm going to try to fix it. We're problem solvers.
Right.
So I start doing some research. And do you know what I found out there?
Very little.
Nothing. Right. Yeah, nothing. There was nothing. There was a lot of cases of where firefighters had on-scene cardiac arrest, and there was a lot of things, about how, we were more at risk and all of these things, but there was not a lot out there about any techniques or tactics. So I saw a problem, and I was like, all right, I'm going to keep researching this. So then I started just, practicing these things. We would get spare turnout gear and get a dummy from the EMS division and then try to, how can we get this guy out of here? He's in cardiac arrest. How do we get his gear off of him? How do we get his stuff? And someone suggested, hey, man, you should do a class on this because there's nothing out there right now. And at first I was kind of like, I don't know. But then as I kind of started, doing more research and getting into it, finding that there was nothing out there and it becoming such an epidemic, I was like, someone's got to say something. So I started writing an article. And then the article morphed into a class. And the next thing you know, I'm teaching at FDIC in a 4-hour pre-conference program about firefighter cardiac arrest. It kind of morphed into that. And so that's kind of, how I got started on the topic. And it's been, pretty great. I've been able to speak, I've spoke at FDIC. I've spoke at our local Virginia Fire Officer Academy about the topic. I've spoke at the Ohio Fire Expo. I've been able to spread this message a lot, and through fire engineering, giving me the opportunity to put some articles online. It's just been a tremendous, very humbling, to be quite honest with you. A kid from a small town, just started doing some research on his own, and the next thing you know, he's, people are calling him a subject matter expert, and which I don't think I'm an expert at it at all. I'm just, a guy who didn't have a clue what to do if this were to happen to him or one of his friends, and wanted to try to solve the problem.
Well, and that's terrific, and it's great that it came from this grassroots effort that you were forced into when that first firefighter got sick. And I think now I think this is why your topic is so timely today, is that there's a great push that's been needed for several years about as we talked about just before we started recording, firefighter health, wellness, fitness, and the cancer initiative. Now, I'm not separating the cancer initiative because it's actually part of the whole health, wellness, and fitness. But my biggest beef is, and I'll tell you, I haven't been active on the fire ground since 85 because of a disability injury that forced me out. But I've never left it. I've always carried a jump bag in my car. I've stopped probably hundreds of times because I've just had the fate brought me to be the first or second person at the scene of an emergency. And I have never let my back injury stop me from responding and doing what needed to be done until regular fire rescue EMS arrived on the scene. But what, I just had a new device put in June in my shoulder and back that has relieved my pain. It doesn't take it away. I'm not cured. It just blocks the pain signal. And with that, at 65, I've just lost 25 pounds. I'm walking 2 miles a day, all this since June 1st. And yet, so many times when I'm watching a video on Periscope or a news piece, and again, with all the coverage we've had on first responders with Hurricane Harvey in Texas and Irma locally here in South Florida, one of the things that grips me like a vice is seeing our brother and sister firefighters who are obese, not overweight, but obese. And it hurts me. It brings a tear to my eye every time I see it, because I have that fear that the next issue of Firehouse or Fire Engineering, I'm going to see that person's name and their department listed in the line of duty death column. And
I totally agree.
And we need to, I don't care if we're career, if we're volunteer, if you're part pay, paid on call, or you fly by the station with wings on your back, we have an obligation to the oath that we took, to the people we protect, to our colleagues and our families, that we have to be the best that we can be. I'm not saying everybody can be the absolute epitome of health, because good Lord didn't create us equal that way. But we have to make the effort to be the best that we can be. Otherwise, we're going to need a lot more of your courses in firehouses across this country. And I know it's tough because, you know, number one, in the volunteer sector, we know the numbers are down. It's taken a big hit as society has evolved over the last 25 years. Both parents are working two jobs, let alone one job, or at least one of them is working two jobs and one's working full-time another job. Where do we get the volunteers to show up? So maybe we don't make a big deal of the issue. But the question is this. What would you rather do in your department? Would you rather have a health initiative in your department? Would you rather bury one of your colleagues?
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, too, it's not funny, but the probably the shocking piece of it is that that's the one piece, I think, that is we're in control of. If you look at some of the studies that are out there, and some of them are older, we have a lot of uncommon factors that make us, you know, susceptible to these cardiac arrests, cardiac diseases, exactly. Cerebrovascular events. We have a whole lot of uncommon factors that we have that are just part of our job. We can't control them.
Correct.
I cannot, you know, there's something, you know, if a building's on fire and it's emitting smoke, there's part, you know, whether it's at the, you know, and we can be as diligent as we can wearing our SCBA and cleaning our gear. But I can tell you, I just came back from Middleton, Wisconsin, and participated in a UHP burn. And they laundered our gear right after we were done. I mean, like literally, like once all the burns were done, boom, took the gear out, took the gear off, you know what I mean, put it in a plastic bag. They took it to the laundry facility. I have scrubbed my helmet 3 times. Since I got home, and it still smells like smoke. My gear, even though they washed it, still smells like smoke. And while we were out there on the training ground, we were far away in the rehab area, but, you know, as anything, a fire's fluid. With the wind was blowing one way, the smoke wasn't bothering you. The wind was blowing the other way,
sure.
The smoke was getting to you. So there's certain things that we can't control. And, you know, we can be as diligent as we can, but we're going to take in smoke as part of this job.
Right.
Well, there was a study in 2008 out of the University of Kansas that said that they studied the arteries of firefighters, and they said that like the average age was about 35, and they had the arteries of a 57-year-old. And that was directly due to the particulates in the smoke weakening like those artery walls and everything. So that makes you more susceptible to having a heart attack, to having a stroke. And that's something that we cannot control. It's an uncommon factor that the rest of the world just doesn't have.
Right.
And so when you talk about things like that, you talk about things that there's going to be pieces because we chose to be firefighters that we can't control. You would think that your physical fitness is something that you can control. You would want to take the reins in that. Like, I know, you know, I know for a fact that I can't control to a, you know, I can control to a certain degree how much smoke I take in, but it's going to happen. You know, gear off gases. We have gear rooms and we have vehicle exhaust capturing systems and all of these things, but I'm still going to take in a little bit of that. Okay, I'm still gonna, there's not a vehicle exhaust capturing system everywhere.
Right.
There's not one in the at the overhang at the hospital where people leave the medic units running. So I'm taking in diesel smoke, whether I like it or not. You know, just on a daily basis, if I take someone to the ambulance.
Sure.
You know, so I can't control every piece of risk, but I can daggone sure control this physical fitness piece, and that is one of the huge pieces that's going to prevent you from having a cardiac arrest on the scene.
Right, right. And you know, it's just, we all have egos. And as firefighters, we got some pretty big egos, let's be honest. And we deserve them. And we deserve them sometimes. We really do deserve
them. We really do.
But we also have to realize that for us to be able to do what we do, we have to at least try to be in the best physical shape that we can. You know, not everybody can get to the gym for 3 hours every morning or every night. But there are things you can do in the firehouse. There are things you can do at home. Simple things that don't have to be, you don't need a counselor for. You don't need any sort of practitioner for. It's stuff that you've probably learned being on the job.
Absolutely.
You know, and you've seen it yourself with calls that you've responded on. So, you know, this is why I felt your topic is so important today, because it comes together directly with one of the main reasons why I decided to come in and do the podcast after, you know, a group of the followers on Twitter said every time I would tweet something about this, every time something happened, they said, make it an issue. Make it an issue by doing a podcast about it. And so that's what I'm doing. And luckily I've had some great guests on here who are all about this. This is, and we see them tweet all the time. On Twitter, and you know, these are the people who I look up to now, and you know, you're one of them. That's why I invited you to the show when I saw the cardiac issue, because every show that I can do, no matter how many listen, if that show convinces one firefighter to do a little something to drop a few pounds or get a little, maybe walk a little further, something like that, then I know it's been worth everything that I've done to put it, all the blood, sweat, and tears to put it together.
No doubt. And I think that's pretty poignant to say as well. I mean, you know, and kind of coming from the same aspect, you know, there are some people who, you know, who may not like the topic, or may, and it's a tough topic. It's hard to go up in front of a group of 70 people and say, as a fire service, we're fat. You know, we're fat and out of shape, and you're fat and out of shape, and why are you doing that, and all of these things. But, you know, I think it's important. It's a difficult conversation, but it's the difficult conversations that usually have the biggest impact. The low-hanging fruit stuff is usually usually stuff that has minimal impact. It's kind of one of my mentors calls it a teddy bear tactic. It makes you feel good when you do it, but in the reality, it makes no impact whatsoever. It just makes you feel good.
Right. Okay, well, we're going to take a break right here. And when we come back with Captain Robbie, we're going to talk more about how do we take the initiative to stop cardiac arrests with firefighters, and what we can do a little bit more. So we'll be right back right after these words. Stay tuned.
Are you a hoarder? There is a difference between poor housekeeping and what is considered a dangerous amount of clutter. Take a look at your surroundings. Is your home a fire risk? Could rescuers reach you in the event of an emergency? We know that hoarding fires are harder to fight. Firefighters must often climb over clutter or wade through items to find an ignition source. Searches really cannot be done in the traditional way. Firefighters may have a tough time getting inside due to blocked doors, but also may have a hard time getting someone out who is trapped inside. In extreme hoarding cases, windows and doors might be completely blocked. All that stuff provides a greater fuel load, which will burn hotter and faster. Remember, there is a difference between being a collector or being a hoarder. It's a great time to evaluate your situation and start on that spring cleaning today.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back with this episode of Five Alarm Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. And our guest today is Captain Robbie Owens, a.k.a. Average Jake Firefighter on Twitter. And we're talking about what we can do to help stop firefighter cardiac arrests. And in this segment, we're going to talk about what to do if we're on the fire ground and it happens to somebody, one of your colleagues, on scene. So, Cap, take it away, and let's learn a little bit from you.
Okay. Like we were talking about kind of before we started the segment, kind of envision this being, kind of a what to do when you're on scene and this event occurs. Now, obviously, in the American Fire Service, we go to cardiac arrests every day. And usually, when it's grandma in the nursing home or somebody in their home, while there are difficulties with that, depending on if they're first floor, second floor, if they're large, or anything like that, there can be some difficulties, but it's usually relatively straightforward. We're going to go in there, we do some cardiac arrest. If you have ALS capability, we're going to do CPR rather, or if you have ALS capabilities, you're looking for an airway, you're looking for access to give cardiac drugs, so on and so forth. And with the firefighter cardiac arrest, we're still trying to accomplish all of those things. However, our battlefield or our environment that we're dealing with is drastically different. Now, obviously, you've got a pump operator who is outside the IDLH atmosphere. You may not have that issue. You may be in just his regular station uniform, and you can kind of do the cardiac arrest stuff the way that you normally would if it was somebody. Obviously, you're going to have larger distractions because everyone's going to want to come over there and see what's going on and make sure that guy's okay. And so right. You have to make sure that you're maintaining that level of, if there's still a fire burning, we got to make sure we're taking care of that. But when you're talking about someone in their full PPE, whether in the IDLH or out, in the IDLH, obviously much more challenging, but that big barrier that we have is that PPE. Even once we get to the firefighter inside the IDLH and remove them, and that's a big disconnect in the fire service too, because we don't train on this. We do a great job in training for rapid intervention and saving our own and things like that. But when those evolutions are normally done once we get the guy out of the building. Well, that's just one part of it. Our rapid intervention training stops usually at that piece. So we have to make sure we're adding in that other piece. How do we get that guy out of his gear rapidly? How do we get that guy out of his SCBA and start doing the stuff that's going to save his life? One of the best things I've seen out there is the FDCPR method. I feel like they do a great job, and they have a very systematic approach to doing to getting someone's gear off. One of the things that it kind of leaves to be desired, however, is that in any video you see with FDCPR, there are guys with no gloves on. Like, I'm talking no fire gloves. If we just pulled somebody out of a hot environment, I can tell you, like, if anybody's ever been in the flashover simulator, which we have them here all over, or just been in a fire in general, you know that those buckles on your SCBA, the seatbelts, the little rings on your gear, those things get hot. And they don't just get hot, they get burning hot. So if you're trying to get this guy out of his gear with bare hands, I can tell you that you're going to turn into a burn patient faster than you're going to turn into a lifesaver. Okay, you're going to burn your hand, you're going to be incapacitated, and you're not going to be able to utilize those hands to do CPR, which is what this guy needs. Right. I call this glove up for PPE removal. And what we utilize, you can do it in one of two ways. One, the rapid intervention company, whatever you call them, rapid intervention company, fast team, rapid intervention team, whatever you call them, whoever's going in to get your down firefighters out, you need to make sure that obviously they're wearing their full PPE. They need to have their gloves, and they don't need to take those gloves off at any point during the firefighter transition outside. When you get outside, whoever's going to be on your firefighter treatment team, I don't care if that's a third-party EMS provider. I don't care if that's just a company that's standing around. They need to have access to structural firefighting gloves in order to get this superheated gear off of this firefighter to start doing compressions. And that always brings up an interesting point too. A lot of fire departments out there, especially big urban departments, they have separate EMS, but they don't. And these are the people who they're depending on to save their life if they go down in a fire. Like, they have these third party EMTs, they come on AMOS, they don't work for the fire department.
Right.
And you're depending on them to do ALS intervention and do all of these things, but you don't involve them in your training. They don't have access to firefighting gloves. They don't even know how to get your gear off of you. But they're the ones that you're depending on to start do CPR. They're the ones that you're depending on to give you those ALS interventions. They don't even know if their trauma shears will cut your gear. A lot of these gear companies are using Kevlar in their outer shell. Well, some rinky-dink trauma shears aren't going to cut through all three layers of that.
You know,
it's just not going to happen.
I saw that exactly. Personally, when I had just been in just under a year, I went to a state fire college in North Carolina, summer training, and whatever the other reason was, I was the last guy on the line on the nozzle in the last day of the practical, and for something that happened, one of my legs fell through the floor of the house we were burning down, and I blew out my left knee, and I got the line shut down, so I didn't kill the captain next to me, the training captain, and I hobbled my way out, and I, because he thought I was tired, and I said, no, I'm not tired, I'm hurt, and I got out, finally got outside, I fell ass over teacups down the three steps, and they realized something was wrong, and I told them my knee, and so they got my bunker coat off, but every time they tried to take off my bunker pants, the pain was excruciating. So they started cutting with first they tried cutting with regular shears, regular EMT, the curved shears that
we use. Trauma shears,
right? Yeah, but those weren't even traumas. Not the big ones that we have now, the bigger handle ones. These were the smaller ones, like you see in the doctor's office, banded shears. That's what they were trying to cut with. And they weren't getting anywhere. And so finally somebody had, this was 1978, but somebody had some other type of shears, and they were able to cut the bunker pants right up the leg, right all the way up to my thigh, and I was wearing shorts underneath that, so at least I was covered. But that was the problem, and it was only a knee injury, but the same situation is exactly what you're talking about. Well, how are you going to get through all those layers with just a regular pair of banded shears if that's what you're carrying in your holster? It's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. And I'll even do you one better than that. So, like, you're talking about a group of people that probably was unfamiliar with your turnout gear. And this, of course, was the 70s, and the ensemble, like you said, the ensemble was not as beefy as what we're used to today. So you can kind of fast forward that. But in my fire department, we do spring evolutions every year. And one of the years we did spring evolutions was a down firefighter scenario. And we had to go in there, get them, and once we pulled them out, they made us continue care. So you're talking about a fire department, and I love my fire department. We're awesome. We have a great group of people. We have a great fire chief, a great organization, but we make mistakes just like everybody else. And in these instances, we pulled a guy out. We got him in the back of the ambulance, and we had to get them out of their gear. And we were trying to make it as real as possible. And we ended up cutting through a high-pressure line on one of our air packs, trying to get the person's gear off of them. And so and it's funny until you think about, wow, if guys in the fire department, who we check these air packs every day. Every day when you come in, it's just like every other house, or at least I hope it's like every other, fire department in America. You show up to your shift, whether it's your volunteer shift or your career shift, and you get your riding assignment, and you go check out your seat. You check your air pack, make sure it's got enough air. So you are familiar with this air pack. You check it every day. And somebody didn't know the difference in a high and low pressure line and cut through it. And these are guys that do this every day. So you're telling me that if a firefighter who interacts with this air pack every day can make that mistake, then you can guarantee somebody who's just a third-party EMS provider who's never seen it can make the same mistake.
Sure.
They can make the same mistake. And so you've got to involve these people in your training. I think that's key number one, especially if you're not – now, and we need to train on it anyway from a fire department perspective. In my fire department, the fire department provides EMS, so we shouldn't be making these errors. We should be familiar with our gear. We should be familiar with our SCBA. But I don't see a lot of these third-party EMS providers even getting, just even give them a pair of fire gloves so they can get your superheated gear off. I think it's something that you've got to look at. And I know that I'm talking to a wide range of fire departments out there. Over 75% of the fire departments out there are volunteers. When is the last time you drilled on this? When is the last time did you call the local volunteer rescue squad over and have them come drill with you?
Right. Good point. Good point.
Yeah. So you continue to move on. And I talked about the FDCPR stuff, talked about removing that superheated gear. Once we get that gear off, it is usually relatively straightforward. It's the simple, the ALS, your BLS, you're doing good CPR. And we know that good CPR saves lives. We're teaching citizens to do hands-only CPR. As long as that person, as long as their diaphragm is still rigid, which it maintains rigidity well into the early portion of a cardiac arrest, you don't even have to provide ventilations. It creates that Venturi effect, same way we draft. And we would draft water out of a pond, it creates that Venturi effect that it's drawing air in when you're doing compressions.
Right.
One of the things about that glove up for fire removal is that exterior team, we have a NASCAR track in my local area, and a lot of the guys before, they came up with these really cool, like, Barrier 1 extrication gloves that Ringers did. They would take structural firefighting gloves and put EMS gloves on underneath them in a layering technique, because they would have to jump into the hot race car and touch all this superheated metal to get the driver out. And then as soon as they would get the driver out, they could take those firefighting gloves off and then have immediate patient care, gloves on.
Right.
So I don't recommend that for the teams that are going interior to a house fire. I don't think that's appropriate. But if you're that third-party EMS provider, then maybe that's a good idea. You show up, you throw on your pair of EMS gloves. You've got your pair of fire gloves that you either bought yourself or the local fire department gave you so that you could help them in this instance. They get a mayday. You throw those firefighting gloves on. They bring the guy out. You can immediately go to work and start helping get that gear off. And then the second that that gear off and all that superheated stuff is out of the way, you toss those fire gloves to the side and you can immediately start patient care. There's no lax in transition there, because I can tell you speed is of the essence with this stuff. The chain of survival that we use for cardiac arrest, just when grandma has a cardiac arrest, that early access, early CPR, early defibrillation, and early definitive care, that applies to the fire ground. In fact, you can adapt all of those chains to the fire ground. So we're talking about early access. Okay, well, part of early access is not just, you know, I need to have staffing on scene to get that early access. I need to have the staffing that's on scene. I need to have a rapid intervention company, or I need to have enough people on my fire ground to, if something goes wrong, I can throw resources at it. That's part of early access. I need to be able to have I need to be trained and have a definitive plan on how I'm going to get that person out. That's early access. Mm-hmm. Then that early CPR piece, I need to be ready to provide CPR. I need to have a dedicated crew outside that's going to be ready to treat this patient. That early defibrillation, as part of your RIT cash or as part of that treatment team that's outside, you need to have at least a minimum of an AED, if not a full-on cardiac monitor that has, you know, the ability to do other stuff. And then that early ALS care, you've got to either know where the early definitive care or the advanced medical care is at your hospital. If it comes from a helicopter, you need to pre-alert them. You need to get them there as quick as you can. Or if you have ALS on scene, you need to make it so that they can get access to the guy and then get access to that trauma center, burn center, whatever your best hospital is in your area, so that they can go. So that chain of survival that we use every day applies to the fire ground as well, and applies to that firefighter cardiac arrest.
You know, it's so important what you said. And if I knew that you had a big, bushy mustache, I would say that you were channeling Chief Goldfeder, because, you know, he, so rightly so, he pushes the concept of proper staffing for all events on the fire ground. We always have to be ready. We have to make sure that the response is equal, not just to the actual incident, but what the incident could become. So even though you may not call in your mutual aid right away, they know that they may be notified. And everything you've said really falls into so many of the articles I've read by him about having the people, the means, the ability, the way, everything ready in the back of, either in the back of your mind or as part of your command, of your incident command center, to activate, God forbid, an incident like this happens. And I think that's one of the strongest facets that he teaches to firefighters all in departments. And it's so valuable. It's so valuable coming from a time when we didn't always have that. And knowing that it's easier, there's still a lot of places that don't have a lot of mutual aid available right away, but it's a little bit easier today and more organized today. And it's the same thing, you know. The other factor also is that those, if you're on the fire ground, it's one of your people, one of your colleagues who goes down. And I hope not very few others have been in the situation I was in. But when I went to visit my folks back in 1984, my dad had a heart condition since the age of 44. And he had had multiple cardiac episodes. And this day that I was there, I arrived late the night before, came in the next day, and he had an episode there while I was there. And I was an EMT level 2 from in New York State at that time. I was out of North Carolina and up in New York State. And I called the 911 first, got them, ran downstairs, got my BLS bag, went up, started taking my dad's vitals and stuff like that. And it was very hard, but I knew, I was pinching myself, literally, to focus on my patient, not my father. I had to focus on my patient and take care of him. The sad part was when the ambulance got there from my town where I grew up in, they didn't have a paramedic act in Massachusetts yet, other than for Boston City Hospital. So when I asked the guys that came up with, I said, where's the rest of the equipment? He goes, what equipment? We have everything. I said, no, where's the ALS? Where's your defibrillator? We don't have that yet. So we got my dad in. He survived for several hours, and then he passed. But one of the things that happens, and you mentioned it, is that all of a sudden a crowd wants to form when they see you working on another firefighter. And if it's that firefighter's own people, we have to focus. We have to do what we learn to do, that, like you said, we do every day on strangers when we respond to this rest home, this hospital, this ball field, this golf course. We do that. And we have to do the same thing here. We have to concentrate on the task at hand, not who it is. Let's do our work and get it done and do it the right way. And I think from what you've said and what you've just brought together from, you know, Chief Goldfeder's teachings and great sayings, is that we have the ability to focus and to do everything humanly possible as long as we're prepared. And that's the key word that we have to underscore. We have to be prepared to do this, to attack this beast when it comes to us, and take care of whoever we have to take care of at that moment.
You're 100% right, and it kind of segues me into the next point I was going to make. First off, I do not have a big bushy mustache, especially not one as impressive as Chief Goldfeder. Like I said, my dad's a fireman as well, and he's got a pretty impressive mustache himself. And I tried to grow one, and I couldn't come anywhere close to his, and so I shaved it. it's like, if I can't grow one even at least half as decent as my dad, I'm not gonna diss the mustache, or disrespect the mustache as much as that. But we have to be able to stay focused. It's a twofold problem when one of us goes down, and I don't care whether it's someone who sprains their ankle or like has a knee injury, like what you were talking about in your situation, or if it's someone that's in cardiac arrest. It's going to be a distraction. As well as, we still have to continue the problem. Okay, if the problem is that we were there for a reason, there's a house fire, or there's some other thing going on, even if it's an EMS call, we still have to take care of that patient. If I'm coming down the steps and I twist my ankle and I get hurt, we still have to take care of the person we were initially called for. We still have to keep putting that house fire out. So one of the things that we take from MCI, if you're in an MCI and a responder gets hurt, you triage them red. Doesn't matter what their problem is. They could have a cut finger and they need to go get some stitches. You triage them red and you get them off the scene, because they are a distraction. And that is the thing that I would suggest for anybody that deals with any injury on the fire ground. I don't care whether it's the cardiac arrest, which is the worst thing that could possibly happen, or the guy that has a hurt wrist or hurt shoulder or a cut hand and needs to get some stitches, get them out of there or get them isolated as fast as possible. Get them, don't work that cardiac arrest in the front yard, for the whole time. Initially, start doing that because we need to get that CPR. Get a stretcher, get that backboard, get them in the ambulance, get yourself in it's kind of like your cone of isolation or your fortress of solitude in the back of that ambulance, so that way you can limit who's coming in, who's coming out, and you don't have 15,000 people, one, critiquing what you're doing, because as much as we talk about brotherhood, we're critiquing what each other does on a daily basis. That's part of our type A personalities that gets us involved in this fire service. It gets you out of there. Plus, when you get that guy in that isolation area, that allows the other guys on the scene. They may still be thinking about it in the back of their head, but they're not staring at it. They're not passing it as they go in to stretch another hand line or throw a ladder. They're not passing that down guy. They don't stop and say, hey, Johnny, how are you doing, if he's got a hurt ankle or something. Or they don't run by and go, God, looks like Timmy's dead. They can allow themselves to be focused on putting this house fire out, because that can be just as dangerous. We know a regular house fire is dangerous enough as it is. They don't need that extra distraction going on in the back of their head, worrying about what's going on with this other firefighter. So get them out of the way, get him in the back of the ambulance, get him off the scene as fast as possible. I would I mean, and we all know what a loser is, okay? We know, we've worked at least, and I know when I go to a cardiac arrest, whether we've got a shot of saving this person or not, whether we think we do or don't have a chance to save a firefighter, we need to give them the benefit of the doubt. We need to get them off the scene because we don't want to have one of our brother firefighters with a sheet over them in the front yard. That's right. Not what we want. Okay,
absolutely.
That's not going to be good for anybody else that's on scene. That's not going to be good for their family. That's not going to be good for our department. We need to get them, and we need to take them to the hospital, period, end of story. We need to work that arrest all the way and give that person the most benefit of the doubt until a doctor says that they're pronounced dead. And I know that's kind of counterintuitive to what we do nowadays because they've come up with so much research on how CPR on the back of an ambulance is ineffective, and we're not doing that in our fire department. If we have someone in cardiac arrest and after two rounds of drugs and ALS interventions, they're still not showing any signs of cardiac activity, we're calling in on scene. But I don't think that that's what we need to be doing for the firefighters in our fire service. We need to get them, triage them red, no matter what their problem is. And, you know, you're at a house fire and a guy falls and breaks his ankle, then he's triage red. He becomes your most important patient. Get him out of there, because all it's going to do is create turmoil on the scene. And that can play, especially in a fire department as big as mine. I can get 600 people in my fire department, and you can guarantee all 600 of them by the next morning are going to know what happened to Johnny.
So
you can just, you know, we need to try to limit that distraction as much as possible and get that guy out of there.
Okay, great point. And that's going to be a great segue to our third segment. When we come back in just a couple of moments, we're going to talk about fitness. We're going to talk about rehab. And I'm going to bring up the dirty word that people don't like me to use, but I'm going to talk about with Robbie, the domino. And we'll be right back right after these words.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
How would you like 5 days of quality fire training in sunny Southwest Florida? There will be all types of classes, including hot classes, and some of the biggest names in the fire service today, all for an incredibly low registration fee. That's right. Join us at the Great Florida Fire School, November 8th through the 12th, at Fort Myers Holiday Inn. Guests include Instructor Captain John Dixon, Dan Kerrigan, Instructor Chris Baker, Ryan Pennington of Jump Seat Fuse, and presentations by some of the biggest names in the fire service today. That should be good enough, but one more big surprise. The fee is just $125. That's right, $1.25 for as many classes as you wish to attend and admission to the banquet. Want to register? Would you like to be a sponsor? Head over to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 1-800-883-4817. Again, go to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 1-800-883-4817. The Great Florida Fire School. Be there.
Sparky the Fire Dog here. Make sure your family has a fire escape plan and they practice it twice a year. One important thing to practice is get low and go. If you see or smell smoke, it's important to get low and go. Protect your family from fire. For more information, visit sparky.org.
We want to keep you, your family, and your community safer from fire. This message brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit sparky.org.
Welcome back to the third segment of this episode of Five Alarm Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. And we're talking today with Captain Robbie Owens, who is discussing with us firefighter cardiac arrest, how we stop it, what we do when it occurs, how do we react. And now we're going to talk about in this segment the whole concept to hopefully avoid this, which is the concept of fitness and the concept of rehab and what we have to do. And as I mentioned at the end of segment two, and Robbie and I were just talking off air, that many of you have listened to these podcasts where I talk about the concept of the domino. And the domino, if you haven't heard, is we've all seen the TV shows where some guy comes up and he sets up 3,000 dominoes, looks like just black tiles all over the floor. But he knocks the first one down, and suddenly they all fall down and becomes the Statue of Liberty or the Washington Monument or a bridge, whatever. That's a good domino down. But in the fire service, we have a history of a tendency for the bad domino. The bad domino is the firefighter who knows that he or she is not in the peak of health. And I'm trying to be polite and politically correct when I say the peak of health. Few of us are, whether we're firefighters or not firefighters. But they don't want to admit it, that they need some sort of remedial physical care. And so they insist upon being that first one through the door. They want to be on the nozzle. They want to be the leader. They want to be the one charging in. But just 60 seconds after they get there, they go down. They're the first domino. And now we have a bad domino because they knock down dominoes all over the fire ground. The people, the guy behind them, he all of a sudden he feels the hose goes slack. What's going on? The RIT team gets called in. And the roof team gets called down because we don't have a line to protect them. So we got to wait for the RIT team to get in there so they can stop knocking down the fire that's inside. So we can even get a team to get in and take this person out who's sick. And everybody's job changes and we wind up with a beehive of disorganization. Now, Robbie's going to talk about, as he just did, we just finished with scooping our starting care, scooping the firefighter up, getting them out of the way so they're not the center of attention, continuing care, getting to the hospital. But there's stuff we can do before that and after that. Let's talk about fitness and rehab, Rob.
Yeah. This is kind of the uncomfortable part of the podcast, I guess. And it's the uncomfortable part of every class that I talk about, because, and I don't even want to call it the sexy stuff, but the stuff that whenever I teach my class, the stuff people are coming to get are those skills and ideas on how they can, if one of their brothers or sister firefighters goes down in the line of duty, in the fire ground, in the firehouse, what they can do to try to be better at saving their life. And that's all important. And I'm glad people come for that because we have to train for that. Like we talked about that in the last segment. We have to train for that. But the piece of the whole thing that I feel is the most important is the preventionary part. And I could sit here and I could quote studies to you. I could talk about all the studies people have done about obesity and worldwide and in the fire service, all of these things. But that's not the point that I want to drive home. And it's not the point that, that anybody wants to listen to. Statistics are important, but they're not personal. And I always like to start this part of the class that I do or any talk I do is talking about me. I, at one point in time, I believe right around 2008, I'm not a big guy. If anybody's ever, if you've ever seen me at any of the conferences or you've seen, me on, my picture or anything like that, I'm not a big guy. I am 5'9" if I'm lucky. I was a wrestler growing up. I was in relatively good shape, played football. And during wrestling, I cut a lot of weight. I wanted to, when I graduated high school, I was about 119 pounds. And I haven't grown since I was about a sophomore in high school. So I was about 5'8", 5'9", and weighed about 119, 120 pounds because I was cutting weight for wrestling. Well, when I got out of high school and stopped wrestling, oh, buddy, let me tell you, I took off with the eating stuff. And I got to college, and I, even though I was still working out some in college, I didn't care. I was going to that dining hall and killing it. I was home and killing it. Yeah, I was. It was ridiculous. I was going to that dining hall at college and killing it. Coming home on breaks from school, eating meals at the firehouse, everybody knows. And it just, firefighters are great cooks. It just spiraled and spiraled and spiraled until in about 2008, I had been on my current department for about 4 or 5 years. And I stepped on the scale one day and was 216 pounds, pretty much 220 pounds. And if you know anything, and I'll say it, you know, I won't say, you know, I don't have to be politically correct. I'm talking about myself. I was fat and I was out of shape. In fact, I was the guy who made fun of the people who would work out on duty. I'm like, man, you're going to waste all your energy for the next fire. Hmm. And then I stepped on that scale. And then right after that, we had a fire. And I had always prided myself. I was that guy. Hey, I'm going to be on the nozzle, or I want to be in I want to be where the action is. And up until then, my youth had carried me through a lot of these fires that I was out of shape for, but I was young. You know, I got hired in my department when I was 20, when I was 22 years old. You know, so I was relatively young, when I got hired on. I was about 27, 26, 27, and 216 pounds. And I go to a fire and I'm out of breath and I can't recover. You know, I'm like, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with me. And then you step on the scale a couple days ago and you're like, well, you're 216 pounds. That's what's wrong with you. And so I knew I needed to change. And so I started working out, started changing my diet. And I didn't change drastically. Like, I didn't go, yep, going paleo, going all paleo. I'm not going to eat meat anymore. No, the thing that I did to start off with was just cut everything in half. Like, if I would go to Hooters and order 20 wings, I'd just get 10. You know, if and maybe no curly fries. If I ate two plates of dinner every night, then I just killed it to one. If I was eating ice cream every night, then I get 2 days a week. I'm only getting ice cream 2 days a week. And then it slowly, I gradually was able to keep reducing that until I got down to about 170 pounds, you know, in about a year and a half. And I don't say that to brag. I say that because there's people that tell me all the time, is like, I don't know how I can do it. And it's nothing hard that you have to do. And I did everything simply. I started out with baby steps and then ramped it up. Today, I'm about 180, 185 pounds. I've gotten into strength training. I've completed two full marathons. I'm in the best. I'm 35 years old, and I'm probably in better shape than when I was wrestling. Now, the big piece of that is it's not a like aesthetically pleasing in shape. I was born with love handles, and I still have them. If I took my shirt off, you would not be impressed. I can tell you that right now. Thank God this is a podcast. you know, if I took my shirt off, you would not be impressed. But I can run circles around kids that are you know, in their 20s on the fire ground. We had a kid who was an athlete who got hired on in our fire department, who played football in college and everything like that. And we had a fire, and he was stuck underneath the tree because he felt dizzy after one bottle. And I was able to come out, another bottle, go in there, because I focus more on functional type fitness. In our job, we can't just focus on one thing, because fitness is different for everybody. People have some people think a six pack abs makes them fit. Some people think completing a marathon makes them fit. When in reality, our job, we have to have the strength of power lifters. We have to have the endurance of marathon runners. We have to have the flexibility of people who do yoga 5 days a week. We have to have all of those things, and we have to have them all right now. So really, in reality, where the fire service fitness stuff takes place is we're kind of in the middle. Just like our job is a lot of jacks of all trades, our fitness needs to be jack of all trades. I recently just I've been on a strength training program, and I noticed my cardio was suffering a little bit. I was a little more out of breath when I was running. So I'm like, okay, I've been doing a lot of strength training, not as much running. Need to kind of ramp up my running so that I maintain that homeostasis level, so that I can still be strong, but still be able to last. Because it does me no good if I can bench 500 pounds, but I can't climb 3 flights of stairs. Right. It also does me no good if I can climb 10 stairs, but can't pick up 50 pounds. So we have to have that kind of medium level of physical fitness. And you don't need anything complicated. You don't need anything complicated. Like you said, like you mentioned before, it's all, you can do stuff at the firehouse. If you've got a piece of fire hose and an air pack, you can fold it up and you can walk around your firehouse. That's all you need. Right. That's all you need. You don't need anything crazy. You can do push-ups with the air pack on your back. You can do step-up. Every fire truck's got a tailboard. Most of them do. You can do step-ups on the tailboard. It doesn't take anything. It doesn't take anything drastic. It doesn't take going to the Globo gym and paying $100 in a personal trainer to get in shape for the job. It just doesn't. And you may not be aesthetically pleasing, because I don't think I am, but I'm functionally able to do our job. I'm functionally able to go and do the high stress, high pressure job that we all signed up for. And that's the big part is like, I want to be able to do, I don't want to my fitness to prevent me from being able to go in on that hose line. No, I want it to help me going on that hose line.
Sure.
And so that's a big piece that people don't want to talk about. And it's always an uncomfortable conversation.
It is, because we, you know, we say, you know, but, yeah, but for the grace of God go I. But the fact is that this job is a physically demanding job. And, you know, we have got great guys like, you know, Dan Kerrigan and Jim Moss, who are always are on Twitter with firefighter functional fitness. There's a difference. If you're going to work out, you know, to be a Mr. America or Mr. Universe, well, there are different things you need to do. But if you want to be a firefighter and you want to be able to do the job on the fire ground without risking your life due to your own physical condition, then you aim towards functional fitness. What do I need to practice? What do I need to do so I can do this job well with the hopefully the least chance of getting hurt due to something that's with me rather than, you know, we can't prevent something that may fall and hurt a leg or hurt an arm or something like that. Those are all the unknowns when we respond on a call. But we can take care of ourselves to the point where we can say, and maybe if there's a fire surgeon in your department or your personal doctor, you clue him or her in to say, listen, I want to get in a little better shape. You know, I'm a firefighter and I just feel that I'm a little bit lethargic and I need to be able to feel more confident physically in doing my job. I'm sure that they'll help guide you as well. And nobody else is going to find out about it because that's the nature of their business. They can't tell anybody else about it.
Yeah, you're 100% right, and you kind of go into the doctor thing. You know, I know not everybody, and again, we talk about most fire departments. 75% of the fire departments in the country are volunteer, so they may not have access to stuff like that. But go to your personal doctor. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility for a firefighter to go into NFPA and get that NFPA standard physical, print off all the stuff that goes on. You know, all the requirements of an NFPA standard physical, walk into their personal doctor and say, I want that. I want that. When you do my yearly physical, this is what I want. You know, you already pay insurance. I mean, 9 times out of 10, we're paying insurance and we're not even using the doctor. I don't go to the doctor very often, but I pay an insurance premium every month.
Right.
So make that doctor earn that money. You know, print off that NFPA, you know, physical and go in there and say, this is what I want. I'm a volunteer firefighter. Or even if your department doesn't offer you that, print it off, go to your personal doctor. Say, hey, this is what I want. You know, that's something that you have every right and ability to do. And that's a big piece of being able to start a fitness program. You need to go talk to your doctor because you may have some underlying things that are going on. One of my guys that I work with in the fire department, he is a heavy set guy, and he was trying to lose some weight. He got to the point where he was so big that he had trouble doing his job. Well, he was trying to lose weight and he was trying to lose, but he kept getting hurt. What do you call it? He was like, man, I can't move. I can't do this. Come to find out, he goes to his doctor and he's like, oh, he's got arthritis in his hip. So there's certain things that he probably shouldn't be doing.
Right.
You know, there's certain things that he can still do the job, but there are different exercises that he can do to lose weight and get in shape, but he doesn't have to be out there running 6 miles a day.
Sure.
You know, it's probably bad for him to run 6 miles a day. So go see your doctor, go see your, you know, if your department has, you know, I'm lucky, I work for a big department and they have an employee health section. We even have a guy that, the county pays that works on fitness for police and firefighters. Like I can go to him and he can make me a workout plan tomorrow if I ask him to. So those are all good things, but there are resources out there. Again, like I said, I just came back from, and this is a guy who, he's a visionary as far as I'm concerned. I just met him in Middleton, Wisconsin, with Chief Aaron Harris of the Middleton Fire Protection District. This guy is like always looking for the next like outside the box. He's a very outside the box thinker. He's got this fire department that's 100 people. Only 5 of them are paid. The rest are paid on call volunteers who come from home, all this stuff. and he wanted to get them to start doing some fitness stuff and working out. So he found a lady who was looking for a gym, who was looking for like a studio to do group fitness classes. He cleared out one of the pieces of the second floor of his firehouse and said, here, you can come teach your fitness classes here, but my guys get to work out for free.
That's a great idea.
We'll rent you this space. Yeah, that's a great, yeah, I mean, come on. There, I mean, that's next level thinking right there. And that also, you kind of think of the dividends that pays. You're getting a more fit volunteer fire service, people that are going to be able to serve your community, and they're going to come hang out at the firehouse more because they can work out. They can come to the firehouse, pull their duty, get to work out for free with a certified fitness trainer to help them on their fitness journey. I mean, that's just next level style thinking. And that lady actually ended up joining his fire department. After she was there like a year, she was like, you know, what you're doing is pretty cool. I want to join the fire department. So now she's a member.
That's great.
So, I mean, that is some next level thinking right there. And that's the type of stuff that we have to do in not just the volunteer fire service, but the career fire service. You've got to provide people these resources. Maybe you don't have the money to get fitness equipment in your firehouse. Okay. Go to your local gym and say, hey, our EMS division will teach all your certified trainers CPR if my guys can come work out for free. I know plenty of places that do that. Go to your local Gold's Gym or 24-Hour Fitness or whatever and try to work out a deal with them. Hey, we'll come do a fire safety day at your gym. Try to bring members in if you let us work out for free. You know, try to barter some of these services that we're already doing anyway and try to get something out of it to help your people.
That's a great way of looking at it. There's just so much that can be done. You know, sometimes, like you said, a lot of us go out to do those health fairs at the mall, local mall or something like that. But, you know, we can also do a health fair for ourselves. There's nothing wrong with taking a Saturday and scheduling a health fair where you have a couple of, from your contacts in the medical field, you bring a couple of physicians or nurses or nurse practitioners, whatever, PAs in, and you go right through the group and you do some basic testing for everybody. We know that these are successful because we have seen it written up in the journals and online of departments where when they've done these, they've found, let's say, out of a department of 60, 70 people, they found 5 or 6 with underlying health issues that were able to be addressed, remediated, and everyone's, you know, back on the job and doing what they love doing, being a firefighter. Well, you know what? What a great way to help everybody is you do it as a unit. You do it as a department and say, let's do our own health fair, but this time it's for us. It's not for the old age home down there, and it's not for the school. It's going to be for us. We're going to do our health fair to take care of our own.
Yeah, that's a tremendous idea. That's a tremendous idea. And I think, like you said, I got off on a little bit of a tangent talking about physical fitness, but I really believe that we have to do some outside of the box thinking when it comes to this. My goal with, my goal was as far as where I see my individual program going and all of this stuff is that I hope it completely goes away. I hope people stop calling me and asking me to come talk about these topics, or people stop calling me and asking me to be on their podcast, because I hope that our cardiac arrest line of duty deaths drop so low that it becomes, because people get the message, that it becomes something that we don't need to worry about. It's a 1 in 1,000 type thing instead of 100 or so a year.
Right.
That's my goal with all of this. And it's going to take some outside of the box thinking. It's going to take some, you know, effort on the part of everyone involved, chief officers, company officers, firefighters, all the way down the line. It's going to take that level. But it's possible. I mean, the ingenuity of the American firefighter and firefighters in general all over the world have solved some tremendous problems. And this is just another one that we have to solve. And it's going to take brain power and it's going to take sweat equity, but we can solve it if we really sit down and think of ways to, you know, stop thinking about what we can't do and start thinking about what we can do.
Absolutely. That's a great way of putting it. Robbie, other than on Twitter, where you're the average Jake FF, and your blog site, averagejakefirefighter.com, if department or firefighters want to get in touch with you, how else can they reach you?
So, you know, like you said, of course, I've got the Twitter, the average Jake FF, and I've got the website, averagejakefirefighter.com. My personal email is which is on the site anyway, but you can email me. It's the letter H, the letter D, the letter F, and then 561 after that. So it's HDF561, and that's at comcast.net. I'm also I'm out in the, you know, I do some stuff on some of the, like, the fire engineering blog sites and things, you know, like the forums or whatever. I don't do too much of that. I read those a little bit more. But pretty much the best way to get a hold of me is like, private message me on Twitter, private message me, you know, on, you know, or on Instagram. I'm the same thing, AverageJakeFF, on Instagram. But there's not really much on Instagram, just pictures of my kids. So if you're interested in that, they're awesome. You know, so there's really not much on there. But, yeah, emailing me, hit me up on Twitter. That's probably the best ways to get in touch with me. I do come out, and like I said at the beginning of the whole thing, and I'll take this show on the road. I offer several, you know, different variations of the program, 4 hour, hour and a half, 2 hour, you know, just all, you know, and to meet the needs. There's a hands-on portion of it. If you're interested in that, I can walk you through some of these drills that we're talking about. And walk you through, you know, instead of just talking about wearing the gloves and the functionality of that, showing you how to do it, all of those things. You know, like I said, been lucky enough to teach it at FDIC, Ohio Fire Expo, Virginia Fire Ensign Academy, all of these places, and would love to come, you know, and we can work something out. I can do something on Google Hangout or something like that if you can't afford to bring me out. I'm not trying to make money off of this. I'm trying to spread a message. Usually if you give me a place to stay and can kind of cover my travel and make it worth the time I'm going to spend away from my family, I'll try to make it worth your while as well.
Well, that's great. And it's just been great to have you as a guest, Robbie. I'm glad we're able to put it together. And a great message, a great topic that's so important in the fire service today. We have enough to do taking care of the people in our communities that we've dedicated our lives and our efforts to, and we love to come home to our families. And it's obligatory on each one of us to do everything we can to make sure we service the people we protect and then that we're able to come home to our families and enjoy their love and the together time as much as we can, without something that might be preventable rearing its ugly head and getting in the way. And so, again, I want to thank you very much for being our guest today. Captain Robbie Owens, Sr. I forgot that, by the way, at the beginning.
Well, that's all right. That's all right.
Okay. And, again, you can reach his website, www.averagejakefirefighter.com, or his handle on Twitter is AverageJakeFF, Frank, AverageJakeFF on Twitter. And it's been a pleasure to have you. You really hit the subject square on and exactly what we needed. I hope we'll bring you back in another couple of months. I'm sure you'll have something else you'll be able to teach us and we can follow up on this or something new. But you know how to present the message, and you present it well, and you present it clearly. And now it's up to our listeners to take what they've learned from you today and pick it up and walk with it and run with it and make sure they take care of themselves and the other firefighters in their department. So thanks again, folks. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I appreciate being able to have the opportunity to come on the podcast. And I'll just kind of leave everyone with this. It's something I kind of sign off every blog I write or every class I teach is I talk about the 3 hours. A lot of us work 24-hour shifts. A lot of us do, you know, different things, you know, with that. And I talk about the 3 hours. I spend 1 hour in the gym every day doing some physical fitness, and 1 hour in the library reading something about our profession, and 1 hour doing some sort of hands-on training, actually putting our hands on the tools and equipment. If you do that every day that you're at the firehouse, or even if you're off duty, you can do it. You'll turn out to be a pretty tremendous firefighter, and you'll make big strides in your career. Again, thanks for letting me spread the message on the podcast, and I appreciate everything that you've done so far.
Thanks so much, Robbie. Folks, we'll be back right after these words. Stay tuned.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just gonna keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Sparky the Fire Dog here. Protect your family from fire. Make sure your home has smoke alarms in every bedroom, outside your sleeping areas, and on every level of your home, even your basement. For games and activities, go to sparky.org.
We want to keep you, your family, and your community safer from fire. This message brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit sparky.org.
And that wraps another edition of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. We'd like to thank our guest, Captain Robbie Owens, also known on Twitter as Average Jake FF, for joining us to discuss how do we prepare and what do we do when there is a firefighter cardiac arrest. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes? Just search for Five Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our partners, Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, Fire Tech, and Hennessy Distributing. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a comment about a show, please drop us a line at dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at cause_origin and stay up to date with our blog at http://bit.ly/DalmatProdTV. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe and let's make sure everyone goes home.